Hello and welcome to Blue Cup Tools, episode 9. I am your co-host, Francisco Gonzalez, and with me as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, your other co-host. How are you, Francisco? It's been a long time since we've done a podcast.
It has been a very long time since we've done a podcast. How have you been, Ben Chandler?
I've been busy. What about you?
You've been easy?
I said busy.
Oh!
Although I was easy as well.
What? I see. Yeah. I've also been busy. Not easy, but busy as well. Doing many things, like working and sleeping, with a bit of eating in between.
You have been a human being, despite the fact that you are, in fact, a cat.
I think you'll find that it is you who are the cat, Ben Chandler. But that's neither here nor there.
Pointing this out.
Yes, that's neither here nor there. The point is that we are now back from a very long hiatus with our podcast. And I think that first things first, we should wish our number one fan a happy birthday. Don't you?
Yes, happy birthday. Yes, happy birthday, Punch, number one fan. And almost, I like to think of him as pseudo-stalker. He's not quite a stalker, but he's not far off. So
yes.
Happy birthday to Punch.
He's not only our number one fan, he's also our number one cow. So that
he is. There's two birds with one stone.
Yes. So I would say that happy birthday to Punch with the two birds and the one stone. Anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So today on the podcast, we're going to talk about starting a new game.
Our last podcast was about finishing a game, and of course, after finishing a game, first thing every AGS person does is go straight ahead and start another one. You recently finished and started a new project, Grimms Love. How do you find starting a new game?
Well, I'll answer your question in a second, but I should point out that I don't know that necessarily most AGSers will start a new project after finishing their project. I think that's something that affects only a select group of the population, the insane, of which you and I believe, are main members.
I won't deny this allegation.
Fair enough. Anyway, to answer your question, the question was, how do I start a new game? I forgot the question already.
How do you find the process of starting a new game? I think that's what I asked. I'm completely sidetracked.
Well, I think I may have talked about this in the last podcast that we did when I was talking about finishing Ben Jordan games and how I would usually start planning the next one in the middle of production of the one I was currently on. But usually the way I find starting a new game is I'll get an idea and I'll get excited about it and I'll think, oh, this will make a nice game. And then I start planning the game, and then I have a honeymoon period where I really like the idea, and I get all excited, and I do all my assets and all that stuff, and I start building the game. And then inevitably, I get tired of it, and I want to do something else, and then production ceases for long periods of time, including up to 4 years. So,
Ben Jordan, case 8.
Exactly. So what about you? What you make about 10 games every week, so clearly there has to be some sort of process that you go through.
Obviously, as you said, it's a very exciting time. Starting a new game is really exciting because you've got this fresh idea. The old idea of yours, you know, you get sick of an idea after you've been working on it for some time, but when it's fresh in your head and it's, you know, it's, if you're working on a game at the moment, it's probably what you consider your best idea at the time. If that's the one that you're devoting your energy to, that's probably what you consider to be your best idea at the time. So it's always a really exciting idea. And I'm pretty much like, I don't exactly make 10 games a week, but I've started quite a few new games. You know, it's a regular thing for me. I'm quite used to it. It's I always draw. The first thing I do is draw just one scene. I like to know what the world looks like and what the character looks like, and I go from there. I can't start... Some people sit down with a design document and write their characters and write settings and plot points and things like that. I can't start like that. I have to draw. So, yeah, for me, that's always a big thing. It's different. I've been working with Dave Gilbert on his next Black World game as well, and that's very interesting and very new to me because instead of instead of sitting down and having to draw my own world, he's actually given me a design document. You know, this is what I want drawn. So I'm learning a new way of starting a project as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I actually do what you just mentioned, especially for the new game that I've started working on now. I have written out half of it at this point. And I figured when I got to the halfway point, I thought, okay, well, I should probably take a look at this and sit down and see what exactly I need as far as art assets, because I realized that I have a lot of backgrounds. So I thought I might as well start building the game to get an idea of how it's going to work and how it's going to look. Because, I mean, I'm sure, as you know, what you write down in your design document doesn't always translate well to gameplay. Like, you can have... it's happened to me plenty of times where, you know, I write out a puzzle that I think is amazing, and then when I actually put it into practice, it sucks. So, you know, you gotta kind of get an idea. So that's what I'm focusing on doing right now, like you, drawing backgrounds and kind of getting a feel for the atmosphere. And now I'm at the point where I want to get back to the writing aspect, and I'm planning on doing an extensive write-up of my main character this weekend.
Okay.
We'll see if that comes to pass or not, but that's what my intent is.
Intent is always hard to live up to sometimes, but anyway. Do you, something that I find that I do, and I wonder if you do it as well, do you go into a new game with certain goals in mind, like, oh, I haven't been able to do this before, or I've never done this before, or this has always been something that I've had trouble with, this time I'm going to work on this, or do you just go, this is my story, I want to just build a game and we'll take it from there?
Yeah, that's usually what I do. Like when Resonance came out, for example, that's the best example I can think of right now. Everybody was talking about the whole short-term memory and long-term memory system and how it was innovative and how, you know, it was a breath of fresh air for the adventure game. And I completely agree. I really liked that system. But when I sit down to make a game, I mean, I don't know what Vince 12's design process was. Maybe we can bribe him to come back and do another interview with us. But if I were Vince 12, I don't know how he got the idea, but I don't know that he sat down and thought, okay, I'm going to make this game and I'm going to have this innovative system in it to do something different. Or if it just came up organically while he was making the game and he was like, oh, this would be a cool thing to do. I kind of have the feeling that it was more of the former than the latter, because
yeah,
it probably took a lot of planning to implement, and that's not something that you can just come up with on the fly. But I might be wrong, so who knows?
The fact that he's written some essays about the nature of interaction and interface in game design makes me think that he's probably sat down for quite a while and thought about it. But then sometimes in the act of building a game, you think, oh, I wish there was a better way of doing this. And then it's in your head while you're building the game, and you sort of stumble upon it when you're thinking about things. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, see, for me, it's difficult because I suck at programming, so I don't want to get too ambitious. I shy away from things that are too ambitious. But the advantage of this game that I'm doing now is that I have other people who are helping me with the programming, so I'm getting I can afford to get a little bit more fancy and out there.
But even beyond the act of programming or actual game features, you can choose to make, like, this time I want to make a, you know, a more animated game. I have spend more time on animations or you know, I want to make better backgrounds, or I want to try a different style or anything like that. I find that's something for me. Usually I'm motivated because I'm trying something new if I'm doing a game.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely, yeah. I did that with the last three Ben Jordan games, I can tell you. I know that for K6 I was excited about working on it because of the setting. The whole Greek thing, I was looking forward to being able to do all the outside backgrounds, because up to then, most of the Ben Jordan games
yeah.
have been, like, interiors and stuff. Well, with the exception of, like, you know, number 3 and number 5, there were some exterior backgrounds, but...
Oh, there's a fair bit of... There was a bit of going around outside in Japan.
Yeah. But I was most excited about 3... I mean, about 6, because there was a bunch of, like, the Greek beach backgrounds and stuff like that. So I was really looking forward to working on the art on that one. And with 7, 7 was more about the story, and 8 was trying out the whole new background method, which ultimately I figured wasn't worth the time. But yeah, it's
always... I think the background... I think the backgrounds in Case 8 actually work pretty well. I mean, I wouldn't say they're any better or any worse than the other ways you did it. It's a stylistic change, but I think some people seem to think they didn't work quite as well, but I thought they worked pretty well.
Well, thank personally. You. The process was way too time consuming for what it was ultimately doing. What the thing that I did like about Case 8 was that I was pleased with was the new style of character portraits. I think it helped me out a lot as far as character portraits, because I was using the dodge and burn tool for shading a lot of the times for the other portraits, and that made them look like they were burn victims. But
to make them look like you used the dodge and burn tool. I've talked to you about the dodge and burn tool before. I cannot stand the dodge and burn tool. It's such an inelegant way of mixing color. So
My thoughts on that. I do. I still. Well, I know your thoughts on it, but the public might not. So why don't you tell us?
Okay, the dodge and burn tool is, to put it politely, the spawn of Satan. you can't really. You're basically relying on a computer filter to adjust the color for you, and you know it doesn't really. It's not a subtle way of adjusting your backgrounds. Really, if you're going to adjust the color of something, get the actual color you want to go to, and use that. If you know, this is what we have transparencies for blending colors. So yeah, don't use the dodge and burn tool. Bad idea.
Would you say that it's a dodgy tool to use?
Oh, I absolutely would. If you use it, you might just get burnt.
Oh. Oh God.
Hey, you went there, so I went there.
Yeah, I know. Right, what were we talking
about? But yeah, I would... But, so anyway, back to the point. It's always, yes. I think, something really, really interesting about, as you were saying, Ben Jordan K6, if you've got a setting you're really interested in drawing, like, for instance, in the latest Blackwell game, I've been given... The very first area is a really interesting setting to draw, so I'm having a lot of fun making all the backgrounds for that. One thing that I really don't like is painting like shoebox rooms and offices and stuff that all look just like, you know, three walls and a floor and a ceiling. That really bores me, so I'm lucky that I've been given these scenes that are quite interesting to lay out and quite challenging, also very fun to draw.
I feel the same way, but the problem with me is that, as I've told you, I'm working with photographs this time around because I'm doing a historical game, and so I'm using photographs. I've been tracing over lots of photographs just for authenticity, but now I'm moving into the phase where I kind of have to do the backgrounds from imagination. And the tracing of the photographs helps because it's helped me kind of get an idea of composition and layout and kind of, you know, the painting style. So making the backgrounds just from scratch is proving to be a little bit easier than it normally would be, but it's still kind of challenging to come up with a decent looking shoebox background, like you say. I hate doing interiors, just boring interiors. There has to be something more interesting to make them punchier. Foreground objects, I find.
Yeah, and also to frame the shot, I've not used foreground objects much in the past, but I'm using a few in Blackwell, Epiphany, as it is called at the moment. I think that might be the final name of the game. And I find that you can really frame a shot better if you've got like a corner. A lot of the times if you look in games, there can be a corner which just... There's a scene where there's a corner that doesn't do anything, and you've got wall and floor, but it doesn't tell a story. You can block that off with a foreground object, and it doesn't draw your attention away, but also it fills the image up. It gives it a bit of a story behind it.
And also it can help kind of define where the player can walk and whether or not they can walk off the screen, which is a big problem that I've had in the past of unclear exits.
I don't know that I can think of any exits that I had trouble finding in Ben Jordan games. None that stick in my mind, anyway.
Well, in the other games, there were.
There's some scenes in... There's scenes in... I look at, like, talented artists, like the guys that did the backgrounds for Resonance and Blackwell Convergence, and you look at the way they've sort of they've made shoebox rooms, so you don't have to have too much scaling or anything like that. Because it is a good sort of it's a good layout for having easy to build rooms. You know, it's the typical they're easy to work with because there's no scaling, there's not too many walk behinds or anything like that. But they've gotten these rooms that are just three walls, floor and ceiling, but they've managed to make them interesting with the use of things like foreground objects and, you know, other little details that just they turn a boring scene into a quite an interesting scene. So that's one thing that's has sort of had me excited about working on my new project is, you know, I've always really pushed to get my art style better and better, and this time is no different with Blackwell. So, yeah, that's a big plus for me. And it's, I mean, Blackwell's not my only project, but at the moment it's the one I'm spending my most time on. So it's kind of nice to just paint and not worry about story or programming or writing or design or anything really.
That must be nice.
You sound jealous.
Slightly. Starting a whole new game is refreshing, but it's also when you get over that initial period of excitement and you sit down and you realize how much work it's actually going to be, I think that's what causes a lot of people to kind of abandon their projects, because it's very easy to get ahead of yourself ambition-wise.
Absolutely.
I myself had a mini freak out the other day when I was starting to build my game, and I looked and I was like, how many locations am I going to have in here? And I told you, Ben Jordan 8 was 62 rooms or something like that. That's the most, I think that's the biggest game I've ever made, and that took me 4 years. Well, on and off, it took me 4 years. So I'm like, how in the world am I supposed to make this game in a reasonable amount of time if I have all these crazy locations? But then I got this idea. See, I got this idea. See,
I see.
People aren't gonna understand that, but it doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
They'll understand it someday. So I got this idea to rather than have like separate locations for each place, I thought maybe I can consolidate them, and maybe I can just have like a magical fake street where there's like three buildings on it that you can are all important to the plot. So I'm gonna try and mess around with that. Yeah, I've already sort of messed around with that.
I think. I find a lot of games, one game that I played recently that I really liked, and I only just finished it the other day, it was Edna and Harvey, The Breakout, is a Daedalic game. It's their first one, I think.
Man, those guys are like the of commercial games.
Oh man, those guys make so many damn games. I'm like, there's no way I can keep up with them.
Yeah.
I've finished two of their games this year, and they've released another three or something. It's insane.
Didn't they just release like that Deponia game earlier this year, and now they're releasing the sequel like yesterday?
I know, and Edna and Harvey too just came out, and they did Satnav Dark Chains of something. I can't remember the name. I don't remember. But yeah, those guys make so many damn games. And somebody told me they're in financial trouble. I'm like, well, if you keep making games and you haven't sold any of them yet, because you still make, like, you know, if you release seven games at once, you're going to have spent seven games budgets without getting any games budgets back. No wonder. Doing very well. Their games.
They've been playing too much game dev story, I think, for their business model.
Possibly. Although game dev story, their games seem to be reasonably sane. My games in game dev story were always like, you know, sport. They're always quite odd or crude.
Well, yeah, my games in game dev story always had the worst titles, as you know.
Oh, sure.
From when we play. For the life of me, I can't remember what the... I'm going to look up to see right now which one I had. Oh, it was Fat Titties.
Fat Titties.
Yes. Phattitayes. That was my best-selling game in game dev story.
I can see why.
Sadly, Fat Titties 2 did not do as well.
I think once you've seen Fat Titties, you've seen one Fat Titties, you've seen more.
Possibly. Anyway, you were saying.
But yeah, so I've completely lost track. I was talking about. Oh yeah, one thing that I found in Edna and Harvey is you go into this place and there's so many rooms, but a lot of the rooms don't have much to do in them. So you've got 100 rooms with only sort of 60 puzzles, and I think, you know, it makes sense, but on the other hand, you can be a little bit more economic with your design as well, because you have to remember that walking in an adventure game isn't very fun.
No, it's not.
I find, whereas, you know, sort of in something like Assassin's Creed or Prince of Persia or Tomb Raider, you know, walking, getting around the environment is fun, or if you're playing something like Thief or Dishonored or Deus Ex where you have to sneak, or Hitman, you know, moving becomes part of the gameplay, but in an adventure game, moving isn't very fun at all, so I find, you know, and actually, that's one thing, I remember I built the game ! In response to criticism that my games had too much walking around, so I made a game with no walkable areas at all. You know, as you do.
That game was great. Rap battles need to be featured more in games.
Yeah, they do.
But I think part of the reason that walking is boring, I think it has a lot to do with 2D versus 3D, because if you have a 3D environment and you're walking around it, it's more interesting. I mean, even like, you know.
Right. It's constant changing.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you have a 2D game and you're just watching a character walk across a 2D painting or whatever, that gets boring. But if you have a 3D character and you're in a 3D background, because even 2.5D can be, you know, boring if they're just walking across the thing.
Yeah.
But if you have like if the camera follows the character and you're walking around, like in a game like L.A. Noire or something like that, then you can get away with a lot of walking. Sure. But yeah, no, I agree. The most frustrating thing that happens to me, I find, is like I'll have this room and I'll be designing it, and then in the middle of painting it or whatever, I'll be like, okay, but what function is this room going to serve? And yeah. I found that I've already got about two backgrounds that are really just establishing shots of the outside, so of the buildings.
Yeah, that's film director.
Which, what's that? Sorry?
Such a film director.
Well, that's essentially
establishing shots in advance.
That's essentially what they are. That's why I had to cut that background. I had the exterior background of Notre Dame. I mean, not Notre Dame, of Sacré-Cœur in Ben-Hur 8. Yeah. Even that screen, even the establishing shot of Notre Dame in Ben-Jordan 8 is really not necessary. It's just all you do is walk across the screen and go up the stairs. There's really no need for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if spoiler. It wasn't there... Well, I'm, yeah.
Very mild.
Very mild. Yes. It was all a cat in the end.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
No comment.
But yeah, that's why I cut, because it was pointless. It was like, why not just, if you're clicking on the area to get there, why not just go straight to the inside? Why have to show the part of the outside? So that's another reason that I think it's important to kind of sit down and write out your idea before you start drawing. I mean, every style works for everyone. You do your drawings first, but I don't like it when I'm drawing something and I realize all the work I'm putting into it is really just because it's only going to be seen for like 2 seconds, or it's just going to be something that people skip past.
So, that makes sense in a like an animation, like a cartoon or something like that, where, you know, they're trying to build a film, and so every scene needs to be sort of quite different and quite interesting and everything like that. But when you're making a game, you want pretty much every scene. You almost want every scene to be interactive, so, you know, things have to be playable. And walking isn't that playable in an adventure game. I would love an adventure game where, like, I recently played and completed and loved Red Dead Redemption. I would love an adventure game where you just go around on horseback doing that sort of thing. That would be great. I would play the hell out of that. No maybe need for combat or anything like that. Just
The next Red Dead game can be an adventure. Red Dead Adventure.
Well, they've had Red Dead Revolver and Red Dead Redemption. Maybe they can do, like, Red Dead Resonance. Oh no, that's
you mean
that wouldn't
Red
work.
Dead Resonance?
Very much so. Thank you, Dr. Morales.
Well, it could be said in Mexico, the whole thing, and then it could be like Dr. Morales' great-great-grandfather, Fulgencio Morales. And then he's like...
You're very good at the... One thing, this is something that I've been meaning to point out, and Vince 12, if you're listening, you've got some explaining to do, because I recently... There's a couple of games I played recently that... I recently replayed, before I played Ben Jordan 8, as you know, I played through the series in its entirety because I wanted to, you know, get back on top of the story. And I did the same thing for Blackwell Deception. Another thing, before I started working on the next Blackwell game, I went through and I played all the games in the series to try and get a better grip on who the characters were and what the setting was like and everything like that. I found that helped me out a lot, doing a bit of research like that before I started the game. So there's a point there. But anyway, on to less serious business. I recently played through the Ben Jordan games. And in the first Ben Jordan game, you get a telephone call from somebody called Ranger Morales. And when you go and meet Ranger Morales, this is from the very introduction, when you go and meet him, he is deceased. Now, in Resonance, you get a telephone call from a Dr. Morales. And here's a mild spoiler, but if you haven't played Resonance by now, go and play it. Stop listening right now, go and play it, and come back when you've finished.
Yeah.
And you get a call from a Dr. Morales. And when you go to the laboratory to find him, what happens, Gonzalez?
He hasn't died quite yet, but he falls out of his machine and then he dies.
He's dead.
He dies at the hospital,
which
he grunts, and I should know because I voiced him and I had to do all the grunts. That was some quality acting right there. I had to give Dave Gilbert like 5 takes each of Anna. So yeah, but yes, I see your point.
And then I was playing the long forgotten Black Isle game called Lionheart: Legacy of the Crusader, which is an RPG. Anyone that's played a Black Isle game knows sort of, you know, Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale and all that. And I'm a big fan, and so I started playing Lionheart Legacy of the Crusader, and I found a Captain Morales. In fact, I found the ghost of Captain Morales, and I went, hang on a minute. What the hell? There's a pattern here. Is there some secret that I haven't been let in on? What's going on here? What is it with... this?
I guess just in the world of video games, being having the last name Morales is like having a red shirt on
Star Trek. Bad idea. Absolutely. You know they're going to die. So actually, from now on, if I ever meet somebody...
Well, I work with someone whose last name is Morales, but she's very much alive and well, as far as I know.
Can I give you a hint?
Sure.
If she offers you a lift anywhere, don't take it.
Okay.
Say you'll drive yourself.
Okay.
Just in case.
Fair enough.
I don't trust her.
She's actually given me rides before. So, that doesn't sound right.
Well, now you know.
In her car. She's given me rides in her car.
You know what I meant, and I know what you meant. Our listeners aren't filthy-minded people. They're mature adults. She?
So, Kenneth Hyde and Matthew Frith were making, I believe, that Star Trek game. They made that Star Trek game. Star Trek Newton, yes. And I don't know that they're
going to make... Nine.
Yeah, I don't know that they're ever going to make their sequel, but if they do, I think they need to have a redshirt character whose name is, like, Ensign Morales. So,
absolutely,
to continue the trend, just giving out a piece of free advice there. If you guys are listening to this,
there you go.
And anybody Matt else McKinn. Who's listening to this, anybody else yeah. who's listening to this, I think we should continue the trend. I think that anybody who's listening to this and making a game, if you have a character who dies at some point in your game and who communicates with your main character via telephone or email or whatever, I think that you should consider having them named Morales. Because
let's make this a trope.
Yeah, let's make it a trope. Why not? Out of curiosity...
We're already half there.
Yeah. What year did that Black Isle game you mentioned come out?
I think it was two. Good question. No, I was thinking of another game. I was going to say 2004, but I couldn't tell you without looking it up.
Oh. Okay. Well, so, we've got.
If time. I look it up, it's going to ruin my connection, and we'll ruin the podcast. Anyway, well,
I'll look it up for you. What's the name again?
It's called Lionheart: Legacy of the Crusader.
Okay, here we go. Found it. Oh, it came out in 2003. Okay.
Okay, there you go.
So
I was thinking of Cult Heretic Kingdom.
So they did it first. So yeah, because the remake of Ben Jordan with Morales in it came out in 2006. And Resonance came out in 2012. Yeah. So we clearly have someone who's derivative.
But I think this is a nice quote. When I noticed it, I was a little bit suspicious of Resonance and Ben Jordan, but when I met the ghost of Captain Morales in Lionheart Legacy of the Crusader, something clicked in my head and I went, there's something here. I'm onto something here.
Well, I've never played the game, so I can assure you that on my end it was pure coincidence. Vince 12 is the one that has the explaining to do.
Vincent, talk to us. Come back to the podcast.
Return.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We should summon... Oh, no, it was Dr. Morales that we had to summon. Vince was already here. We didn't need to summon him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. By the way, did you see... Were you as surprised as I was to see Vince's lack of hair?
Yeah, that... Just man, as an aside. What is this turned into, like, E! Entertainment Tonight, AGS version?
Yeah, it has. So
Vince 12 and Felicia Day.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Is that hair gone? Maybe Felicia Day cut his hair off as some sort of arcane tribute.
Maybe Felicia Day just some likes ritual. Bald men.
Maybe.
Maybe Felicia Day tweeted about how she likes bald men, and Vince 12 shaved his head, and he said, "This is my in. This is how I'm going to get Felicia Day to notice me in Resonance, and maybe she'll get a fake head."
Yeah. Do you think she rubbed his head? Because he's quite tall. So she'd need to bring a small step ladder. Maybe he bought a small step. This is pure conjecture, but you can see where I'm going. Maybe he turned up with a small step ladder and a bald head and say, "Hey, how are you?"
Or nice, maybe nice. he turned up with 10 copies of his game, Resonance, and he put them in a pile on the floor and had her step on top of those.
There you go, photo op. Ching.
Exactly.
Right there.
Photo op and free publicity. It's two birds with one stone again.
Once again, we are the most economical stone killers. Actually, that's horrible. I don't want to think about killing birds. Stone. Let's move on.
Let's leave the birds.
Now that we've done the gossip port.
We killed two Moraleses with one stone.
That's the best thing. I like that. Two Moraleses.
Also, our conjecture is pure conjecture. Vince is happily married with children. He's not going after Felicia Day. I'm sure his shaving of the head was an artistic decision.
It probably was. Or maybe he just likes shining bald headlight into the eyes of his foes or the critics that panned Resonance, if there were any.
I don't think there were any.
I think there was one that was like, why is it so res? But anyway.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Anyway.
Those people are dumb. Yes, moving on. So going back to our original topic about starting new games.
We were talking about something at some point.
I'm sure we were. But going back to the topic,
right, so,
would you care to perhaps talk a little bit more about, I mean, aside from Blackwell, what it is you're working on, and aside from our Mags game, which we haven't said anything about?
Well, obviously, the Mags game is almost finished. We should talk about the Mags game first. We should talk about the Mags game. We actually have fans of the podcast. Should we reveal what it is?
I think we should, because by the time that this gets released, the game will probably already be done and possibly released, because it's November 5th, and yeah. So Yeah.
Okay, so
tell us all about it.
We had an audio drama, a periodical on our podcast, which was quite popular with the fans, called Spaceman in Space, featuring our very own Francisco Gonzalez. And after a season of 3 episodes, which I believe is a half season,
yes,
as far as audio drums go.
Was it only 3? It felt like a lot more than 3.
I think it was 3 or 4. Anyway, it was cancelled by our producer.
It was 3 or 4? 3 or 4.
Oh dear. It all comes full circle. But yeah, so the show was cancelled by our producers. So we said, look, we have to get our inner producers. We got some, I have to admit, some of the fan feedback we got was a little, it was heartwarming, it was a little creepy, it was concerning. And we basically said, we need to do something for our fans. Our producers have cancelled our audio period. What can we do? What is a skill that we have that we can do to bring gourmet, this back to our fans? And so,
gourmet cooking?
I'm not much of a gourmet chef, I hate to admit.
Neither
I'm sorry.
Am I.
Otherwise,
unless you count Captain Crunch as a gourmet dish. Which I do. Okay, fair enough then. Let's give our fans Captain Crunch. They'll like that.
But because it's too costly to ship Captain Crunch to all of our 10 fans, or 7, I can't remember.
That's pretty generous.
We decided. That, yeah.
But okay. Yeah.
We would actually make a Spaceman in Space game. So we've done it, and it's a point-and-click adventure game.
It's incredibly meta to do that, by the way.
Considering it is incredibly meta.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so we have done it, and it's pretty much done. It's a one-room Mags game. I think it's there's some elements in there which I find quite humorous myself. I think you might enjoy some of the comedy we've put into there.
Yeah, I think so too. Especially if you find
so that's
pee jokes funny.
I do. But you already knew that.
Well, who doesn't?
So that's one of my... And this is a game that we made in over the course of like 3 days. But I think it's still, you know, there's still some entertainment to be had there. Well, another one of my new games is... Well, it is a Mags game. That's exactly right.
Which is not a Mags game. So, not to take away from or... what's the word I'm looking for? Not to diminish the quality detract from the quality of Mags games. It doesn't mean that just because it's a Mags game, you don't need to spend a lot of time on it. But, yeah, clearly the amount of time spent on it was a lot less than, you know, if you're on a time limit.
We could have made it in for a one-room, one-week competition, but we're busy men, so we did it over a month.
Yes.
But anyway, so yes, that's one of our projects. Another one of my project, other than Blackwell Epiphany, is one that hasn't actually got a name yet, but it's... I'm not really sure how to describe it. I'm making it with Dan Alexander of Zage Engine fame, and we're actually looking at making it in Zage. So it's he's hoping that it'll be the first game ever released in Zage, so we're looking at Windows Phone 7 and PC and Xbox 360. So I'm trying to do a bit of a... It's hard to explain, but a rock and roll game with... Imagine Full Throttle mixed with a Blackwell game, if that makes any sense at all. Mixed with something completely different that I can't really describe. Maybe Diablo 2? I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make sense at the moment, but when you play it, it'll make sense. Like, I hate doing a sort of a cliche genre. I hate having... Go, oh, I'm going to make a fantasy game. Where's the elves and the orcs? That doesn't interest me at all. If I'm going to make a fantasy game, I want rock and roll, and I want ghosts, and I want, you know, cool stuff. So, yeah, it's a fantasy game, but it's a contemporary sort of adventure game at the same time, I hope.
Yeah, well, I've seen it. I've seen one room, and I think it's cool.
I think I've shown you two.
Yeah, well... Maybe. I know I've played one.
Anyway, obviously one was more memorable. One thing that I'm really doing this time, one thing that I've been picking up quite a bit and doing lately is sound effects, you know. So moving forward into this game, and especially with Falling Skywards and Piss, I wanted to put more sound into the game because I've always just... Audio's been something I've just thought, oh, well, you need music, but I haven't worried about sound effects much. So in this, I'm kind of having fun getting more sound effects and adding things in, and more animations, you know, putting more effort into the graphics. And I want to... Obviously, with story, it's going to be pretty bizarre if you've played any of my games. So, yeah, I don't know what it's called yet. I'm thinking of different names, and there's one that I like, but I don't know that I like it enough yet. So,
what's that name?
If you see,
can you divulge that moment, information?
Yes, it is Ortus, like tortoise without the T.
Oh, that's interesting.
Not what anybody expects, I'm sure. But yeah.
Well, it's not what it's I was not expecting. I would hope not.
Which is new for you. Now, Gonzalez, please tell us about your game in production, which I have seen and I have played, and I'm quite enjoying watching the production take place. It's a very interesting game to me because it's very unique.
Well, that's good. I still am at that stupid phase where I'm like, I don't want to talk too much about it, so I don't want to say too many details about it. But even though I've said some details at different places, like at Mittens, but basically the gist of it is that it's, like I said, it's a historical game because it's set against an actual historical background, even though it has historical characters and real people in it and based on real events. It's a fictional story set against this historical backdrop. It's different in the sense that the story is not about a person who goes up against a global conspiracy or something evil. It's really more a man versus himself kind of story, which I don't know if it's been done in other games before. I'm hoping that it'll be something that's not boring to people. And basically, it's going to be my first commercial venture. I'm hoping to sell it once it gets done. So we'll see how that goes. It's actually funny that you bring up sound effects, because not only I wanted to sort of do some shameless self-promotion and say that most of the sound effects for Spaceman in Space, which are all very silly, but also there's an interesting thing about when you're used to getting free sound effects off the internet and you start working on something that's commercial and you realize that you're going to have to do a lot of the Foley yourself because of copyright issues. So that's an interesting hurdle to jump over. But yeah, it's been something that's been in the back of my mind. But yeah, that's my game I'm working on.
I had to think when I was doing Piss, because we were selling it, I had to think, well, I gotta start, you know, I gotta employ someone to make sound effects for me, because I don't want to use free sound effects over the thing and, you know, that sort of thing. So I had to really think, and I had to, you know, when you're making a commercial game, which is probably a topic we should talk about at another point, seeing as it's something we've both looked at and looked into and everything like that, there's a bit to take into account.
There is, but we will save that discussion for another time.
One thing you said which interested me the other day was that you already had a voice actor in mind for your character, and you were writing with that voice actor in mind. And you said that about Percival Quentin Jones in the Ben Jordan games. You knew your voice actor, you knew the characters, like their style of acting, and you actually wrote the character sort of almost based around that. Does that really help you write a character, knowing the voice actor beforehand?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you can hear the character's voice in your head, it absolutely helps you get a feel for what they would say, what they would sound like, how they would sound it. And it helps you kind of punch up the lines a little bit more. Because if you have an idea of what their delivery is going to be, you have an idea of how to write the line. So, yeah, it absolutely does help. For Percival Quentin Jones, it's basically just Chris Jones. I know how Chris Jones speaks. Not to say that Chris Jones speaks like Percival Quentin Jones, but I know how he does that voice. So I could hear him saying it in my head, and it made it so much easier to write.
I imagine with Dave Gilbert, now that he's done Rosa and Joey, well, not Joey more so than Rosa, but Joey and Rosa for two games, you know, not two games, for four games, or three four. Games. Three games with Rosa, four games with Joey, unless you count Bastel's Opportunity. But he's had sort of especially with Joey, he's had the same voice actor for 4 games now for the same character. I imagine that makes starting a new game quite a bit easier.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it does. You know, I mean,
having that delivery in mind, probably, yeah. So yeah, that's something I've never really done much voice acting, so that's never something I've thought about too much when starting a new game, you know, but yeah, I like the idea. When you said it to me the other day, I thought, "Oh, that's an interesting thing to look at."
It's not just that if you know your game's going to have voice acting, it helps, but another thing that helps too as far as dialogue is if you read it out loud, because reading dialogue silently and hearing how it's spoken helps a lot. The difference between that helps a lot to realize whether or not it's like it's not good, but whether it's natural or not. Because sometimes you can write something that sounds good, you know, like if it was on paper in a book or something. But if you think about your characters actually saying that and you read it out loud as them, sometimes it sounds a little stiff or a little awkward or something, and you kind of get a feeling for how to make it sound more conversation-like, you know.
That's a piece of advice that's been given to me a couple of times, and I do it sometimes, but I probably don't do it enough. I know I have a habit of writing way too much. You know, yeah. I can do a 10-minute written introduction. So
me too.
That's something I should really look at. Yeah.
Yeah, but it also gives you an excuse to do silly voices as you're playing your game.
One last question I'll ask and we'll discuss with you is, when you start making a game, you're just making it, how do you do it? Do you go through and you roughly build everything, or do you start with the very first part, or what do you do? I usually find I've built a vertical slice of the very first few rooms, so I've got, you know, a completely playable version of the very first few rooms, just so I can get a feel of the game and everything like that. How do you do it?
That is an excellent question. I still don't know.
10 games and you still don't know.
No, I really don't know, because it changes every time. I know what I want to do at the beginning of starting every game, but what I actually end up doing is completely different. Like, for example, for my game now, my plan was write out the whole thing, build the whole thing with placeholder art and stuff, and then go filling in the stuff as necessary. But the way it's been going has been, I've written out half of it, I've started building it, I have a few placeholder things, and I have mostly the completed assets. So I don't know how it's going to end up happening. But usually what happens is, yeah, I'll just kind of write out the whole thing, have an idea of what's happening, I know what backgrounds I need, I make the rooms, and then I kind of just build the game and then write the dialogue on the fly and tweak it later on as I go back. So it's kind of like a little bit of everything. But I'll tell you what, I definitely leave the animations for last. That's most of the time. And I'll type in, you know, when I have like an early beta version, I'll type in stuff like, you know, amazing animation here of this happening. And, you know, awesome animation here. Yeah, right. Like, I remember I had here is a fantastic animation of Percival Quentin Jones slamming the door into the face of the Knight of St. Anthony. And then when I actually animate it, it's like, well, it's not that amazing.
Well, it was a good animation. I liked that one. Not as much as the fire extinguisher bit.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. That probably had a...
That was great.
Fire extinguisher knocks out bit message here. But yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
By the way, if you haven't played Ben Jordan 8, go and play it.
No. Do play it.
No, go and play it. It's good.
Go play it.
People said various things about the endings and things like that. I thought the ending was great. The ending that I got. Well, I got two endings. One of which was extremely... I got the secret ending with your help, so... Yeah. But go and play Ben Jordan 8.
Yes.
And if you haven't bought the Summer Batch bundle... I think you've got till November 11 or something like that. And then, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do with the game after that. So who knows? So yeah.
Oh, it's coming up soon. The bake sale game's getting released to the public. That'll be an
event. Yeah.
So that should be interesting.
That'll be interesting. Yeah.
But for now, I think I think we've done enough talking for our return to the airwaves, and no pun intended. And I think we should probably wrap this up. Unless there was anything else you wanted to add.
I had something in mind, but I forget, so we'll talk about it next time. I'll write it down about next time.
Okay, that works. In the meantime, if you enjoy the podcast, you can follow us and listen and on Twitter, and you can read our interesting tweets about game design and or calling each other cats and making terrible puns at each other. You can follow me at Grundislav Games. That's @GRUNDISLAV GAMES.
And I am Ben_CAT. That's the Twitter, so get on that. And you probably won't hear from us much for a while because I'll be playing Dishonored, and Grunner's Lab's already finished Dishonored and will be playing Assassin's Creed 3. So don't expect too much from us. But
yeah, don't expect much Look regularity, out. But we'll be back. And yeah. By the way, you are Ben_304. Not CAT.
I am.
So, just in case anyone gets confused. We don't want Ben Cat to get a lot of unnecessary followers that he doesn't deserve.
About spacemen and people tweeting him about rednecks and things.
That guy's a dick.
So. Man, and he's a cat.
Yeah, it's the worst of both worlds. He can't make up his mind. Is he a dick or is he a pussy?
Cat dick.
Oh, God.
I went for the easy joke.
You clearly
We should end this podcast now. Goodbye.
Repression. Bye, everybody.